You know, as long as it was not fattening, immoral, or corrupting, that I could do what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And within the guidelines of the Phoenix program, which was, again, to me, was the overall coordination of the units that existed in the Delta to destroy the infrastructure.
So there isn't really any guidelines that are articulated?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Was Parker's staff working up something?
Well, they were constantly working on things. One was to get a program of instruction developed to train Phoenix coordinators at Vung Tau, which I was instrumental with Jim's blessing and help. And making some significant recommendations, and was the guest speaker at several of their first classes that they taught. But see, what happened, this was moving so fast in early 68 that people began arriving in country and being assigned out, and then they were pulled back and sent to Vung Tau for the training.
Okay, I see. Where was the Phoenix training facility in Vung Tau?
There was a compound there.
Okay. And it just had a classroom in the compound?
Yeah, there was classrooms and different type of training facilities out on the grounds, because
were the RD cadre and the Phoenix people mixed in together?
So, no.
You know,
because
Americans is Phoenix, and okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they tried to keep them separate, and of course the group I was involved in were the American personnel, and
who was training them?
There was a U.S. cadre down there.
Okay. Just of... would it have been agency people?
They were agency people, and then they began to get some Army personnel in. And one of the first things that I established where we could do it is we had these people come through Canto, so that we gave them an orientation. Now, what we expected of them as Phoenix coordinator.
And what was that? What were your expectations?
Well, you outlined the mission, which was at whatever level that you're working at.
District or province.
Yeah. Be aware of the entities that are operating in your area of responsibility, and establish a rapport and contact.
Mm-hmm.
With the personalities, and try and develop a rapport so they trusted you and they didn't regard you as a threat.
In other words, if you're in the province, go over, meet the special branch guy, meet the MSS guy, meet the CIO guy, meet all those people, introduce yourself.
And if there are any U.S. Army elements or SEAL elements,
okay,
or Air Force intelligence, or Army intelligence, establish a very good rapport and relationship with them, and try and convince them that the only thing that we were trying to do in Phoenix was to focus all of our resources on the VCI.
Okay.
It seemed that the PSA advisor was never there. He was either en route to Saigon or coming back from Saigon. And when I talked to the U.S. and, I would have to say principally the U.S. people there in the province, they'd say, well, this guy is either drunk or shacked up with his girlfriend anyway, and we get very little. We'd just written that off.
And that's because that the public safety advisors were not professional people.
That's right.
People.
Many of them were former policemen, or they were policemen on leave, or they come from some law enforcement activity and were plunged into that environment. And I'm not really cognizant of the training they received, but based on my own experience,
not much.
There was almost a total incompetence, which eventually caused trouble. See, what our concept was, that we had 84 or 100 proves in most provinces.
Right.
We could use them.
Right.
But if you needed to seal off an area, you need at least maybe a couple of hundred troops. We could put the NPFF by the Russ and Puss in a location as a blocking force.
Okay.
And the proves do the dirty work.
Right.
We could get the proves, but not necessarily the other forces.
Okay. They were not necessarily interested in combat operations.
I'd try and put it as maybe another way more delicately is that their proclivity was to support the National Police Force down there as opposed to try and see that force engaged in operation.
I see.
I think it had to do principally with their lack of background.
Okay.
So, and I complained about the lack of use of about 1,800 man NPFF in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you think about it, that could be an extremely effective light infantry strike force. And we're just not getting the use out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I complained about it, and he said, well, how do you visualize this? And I said, well, the first thing you're going to say is that I'm trying to expand my power base, and it ain't that at all. What I'm proposing is that there'd be some kind of central control set up that would give us the capability of utilizing that up to 1,800 police in the Delta to support these operations. And with the kind of people that you have out advising at the province level, just ain't ever going to get it done. And one thing that had occurred after Tet, they did bring in a group of enlisted men out of military police, and many of them were totally inept. And I know from in talking to some of them, they had never been in combat, and their experience was analogous to shore patrol duty.
Mm-hmm. In what capacity were they brought in?
They were going to be advisors, actually working with the NPFF.
Okay. I assume that was probably the first thing that you did, was you wanted to get a province, a Phoenix guy into each province.
Yeah.
Is that how you sort of said
the
your
Phoenix
priorities?
Program had one of the highest priorities in MACV for personnel to flesh it out. And as fast as they came in country, they were signed out directly to the provinces, districts, except that it was around January, February of 69 that we got a message that a briefing team was coming down from MACV.
Okay.
And they wanted all the Phoenix coordinators brought in from the district and the provinces to attend this half a day briefing on the new Big Mac reporting requirement.
Okay.
Has anyone mentioned that to you?
Big Mac, certainly. Combined Documents Exploitation Center.
Yeah, well, I'll give you my version of that, my reaction.
Okay.
In the meantime, a copy of the paper would be sent down so that it could be reviewed. So, being a good soldier, we coordinated with MACV and with Air America to bring in, I think I was able to bring in practically every coordinator that I had that was either not on R&R or sick or something.
And this is that district and
the
province?
Canto, yeah.
Okay.
In the meantime, we got this paper in, and it was a reporting requirement that would choke a mule.
Yeah.
And it was even to the point of designing data entry sheets so that it could go into the computer up in Saigon.
So it must have been that thick
it
or something.
That
yeah.
Thick.
Okay.
It had God knows how many annexes to it.
Yeah.
And
That must have been that SOP 3 or something.
It may have been.
Okay.
But I looked at it, and my first reaction was disgust. I met with Ted Grimen, who was the Mac VG2 down there. And we coordinated with the other staff members. And we came to a conclusion that, and this later appeared in a message that went to General Abrams, is if we implemented Big Mac, we would stop pursuing the war and begin reporting on it. That was the bottom line.
Okay.
General Davidson's staff sent a letter, a memo to Ted Shackley, that essentially said that since you people oppose submitting vital statistics in the form of information data to MACV, we'll be unable to support your requirements.
Yeah.
So, as I understand it, that memo hit Evan Parker, and he went over and talked to Ted about it. And I think the opinion was that if Ted acknowledged the existence of the memo, he would have to challenge Davidson and essentially ask for his relief.
I see.
I mean, that we're talking about the movers and shakers.
Yes, I understand.
So the request that I got, and here I'm, for some reason over my lifetime, I've ended up caught in the middle on a lot of things. And I don't resent it because I think that I've been able to influence some good things. But the question was put to us in the Delta, would you be agreeable to implementing a portion of Big Mac with the understanding that when you get to those big annexes, that they'll be deferred until a later date?
Okay.
And this is verbal,
mm-hmm.
that it was a...
From Eckhart, I suppose.
No, from Evan.
From Evan, okay.
That this would be politic to not cause him a great furor over mm-hmm. and above what already existed at the MACV level.
Okay.
So I guess the sense of what they were asking Eckhart and Jim Ward, would you agree to this?
Yeah.
So we agonized over it, and being a political scientist major, and having been in the intelligence business for a long time, I realized the necessity of being prudent at times.
Mm-hmm.
You always have your day.
Compromise is the
so
part of politics.
We recommended yes, we could live with that. And I guess the subsequent message or discussion between Eckhart and Abrams ensued, and we then began to implement portions of Big Mac. But that came on just about the time that I was getting ready to leave.
Okay. Who was making the assignments at that point? Was Abrams making the assignments
well,
at that point?
Well, yeah, the G1 or the J1 in MACV still made the principal assignments, but in many cases they would coordinate them, and I would presume that if he had like Escola was a full colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that that was coordinated through Evan's staff to determine, do you want to send a full colonel down there or another lieutenant colonel?
And how early on did you meet him? Did you meet him?
It was within the first week I was down there, because I wanted to start running with the program, not just let it languish and we have a program in name only. And Jim agreed with me that we would try and be out every day, and if we couldn't get MACV helicopter support, we would use Air America. Yeah, it was after the drawdown, I still had teams in all the countries, and in Cambodia, I would have an interrogation team in the middle of an interrogation, and the state would call and say, we've got two guys coming back from R&R in Bangkok, so your people have to leave.
Yeah.
They have to leave until the numbers were down and they could come back in two or three days and continue the debriefing. Well, quite often there was a lot of of clumsy, heavy-handed type activity, and I had good and bad feelings about special forces, because on one hand they were very courageous, mm-hmm. and it cost a lot of lives, and on the other hand they were, I don't think, that appreciative of the nuances of being super cautious in collecting and evaluating your intelligence information before you run an operation. And mm-hmm. up in along the, I think it was in Kien Phong, mm-hmm. along the border, they the sun rose one morning, he went into a position there, and every man on position been shot through the back of the head.
Special Forces.
It was not U.S., it was
the LLDBU.
Yeah, that was working with them.